Welcome to another episode of My Weird Prompts, an AI-generated podcast featuring the random prompts of Daniel Rosehill as answered by a revolving cast of friendly AI characters. Join us for deep dives into AI, technology, and whatever other random thing Daniel finds fascinating today. Subscribe on Spotify or your favorite podcatcher. Now, today's episode.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Hey there, Herman and Corin. So I'd love to chat today about the small claims court and that procedure as it exists here in Israel. I mentioned in a previous podcast that I was conferred with a BCL degree from University College Cork in Ireland many years ago. So my undergraduate degree is in law, but I decided after learning law for 3 years that the path of a struggling tech writer seemed much more prosperous than becoming a high-flying corporate lawyer. But I've enjoyed my career. To date, it's been colorful and interesting, and working with AI has really captured my imagination. But the law is interesting, and I remember that the modules that most engaged me were the ones that were less case law focused and more kind of thinking about the bigger question of what is the law and who is the law supposed to serve? Subjects like jurisprudence and international law, very interesting aspect of law. And one of the, I think, purest forms of the exercise of justice, where the power asymmetry between litigants is most balanced. And often the lawsuits are the most wholesome. It's supposed to be an easy procedure. Is the small claims court mechanism, which existed in Ireland, if I'm not mistaken, the very start of the legal system, and exists here in Israel. I almost got to small claims once in Israel. My wife and I booked a holiday with an airline that, according to Corin, our legal advisor, says we can't name which airline. So we booked a flight, airline canceled the flight, and that was it. They said, sorry. No refund, not even a voucher. And I looked up the law, because with airlines there's European legislation regarding, you know, what's called in the law force majeure, or the kind of things beyond the control of an airline. And I determined that actually I'm pretty sure we have a case here. This seems fairly clear cut. So I filed in small claims, and I have to say I'm critical of many things in Israel, or domestic issues, including our joke of a tenancy law. But I will praise endlessly Israel's efforts at digital government. That, to my mind, is where it shines. It does have a representation. It does have a track record for being very bureaucratic. I think the government puts in a lot of work to digitize as much as it can. And the small claims procedure is pretty good in that respect. You open up an online case. You enter your tviya. It's called tviyot ketanot in Hebrew, which means small claims. Your tviya is your claim. You name the party, and it's self-service. There are lawyers who will do it for you for a fee, but often actually at least more upstanding lawyers will tell you that you might go to them for legal advice, but they often recommend just doing this yourself. It can be totally self-service, and the awards are up to 38,000 shekels. You guys can do the conversion to the US dollar, which is of course in a state of fluctuation at the moment. But the procedure of small claims is supposed to be friendly. But from what I can recall about other small claims procedure, you've laws like in different parts of the world. I'm talking here, the right to counsel. Sometimes it's actually prohibited that neither side can retain counsel. They have to self-represent, or it proceeds ex parte. And basically, it often comes down in practice, and that's where I think it would be worth discussing, because there is a law on paper and there is a law in practice. In practice, what happened with I didn't finish my airline story. The next day, I got a call from a law office saying, we represent the airline, and we'd be happy to offer you this, a full refund. So after months of trying to contact the airline, finding contacts, not months, but I made some efforts in this regard. Nobody answered anything, and suddenly, within 24 hours of filing in small claims, suddenly they're prepared to offer a full refund. So frequently, that's the actual power of the small claims mechanism, is it showing you're serious and it's compelling out-of-court settlements. The other question that we have to talk about in small claims, my wife mentioned this in regard to our tenancy dispute, is, and this is the Israel-specific context, but has broader applicability. So a small claims court makes an award, a finding, let's say. What guarantees that that actually is that actually happens? Whether it's monetary damages or some kind of an order, and the answer for monetary damages, at least, is I believe it goes to a body called Hatzarat Lapoal. I need to brush up on my legal Hebrew, and they have various powers like putting a lien on bank accounts and even potentially blocking people from leaving the country. So there is the operation of the law. And there is what actually happens when people go to small claims and trigger various enforcement mechanisms that actually sometimes compel other people to stop being ridiculous and avoid this. So that's what I'd love to talk about in today's podcast, Herman and Corin, the operation of the small claims court. Where does it come from? Is there kind of a jurisdiction that's the pioneer of this mechanism? Has it always been something they're recognizing that people might have legitimate claims, but the value of those claims might not be in anywhere near enough to pay for legal counsel. And what kind of volume are you talking about here in Israel in terms of the work of the small claims court? And what's the next step up? If I'm not mistaken, it's the magistrate's court. But what is there a direct chain of appeal that if someone loses a small claims, where would they bring it to next? So Herman and Corin love to talk today about the operations of the small claims court mechanism, both here in Israel and overseas. Over to you two.
Hey everyone, welcome back to My Weird Prompts. I am Corin, and I am joined as always by my brother, the man who probably knows more about the Israeli court archives than is strictly healthy. Herman, how are the dusty digital stacks treating you this week?
Herman Poppleberry, at your service. And hey, that is only because the archives are fascinating, Corin. It is where the human drama meets the bureaucratic machinery. People think the law is just dry statutes, but it is actually a collection of the most intense arguments people have ever had. And speaking of human drama, we have a great one today from our housemate Daniel.
Yeah, Daniel sent this over after a bit of a victory lap in the kitchen this morning. He was making espresso with a very smug look on his face, and for good reason. He was telling us about this saga he had with an airline. He booked a flight to London, they cancelled it at the last minute, and then they basically ghosted him for months. No refund, no vouchers, just radio silence and automated, "We value your patience" emails.
Typical corporate inertia. It is a calculated strategy, really. They figure if they ignore you long enough, you will just get tired, lose the paperwork, or simply decide that your time is worth more than the 3,000 shekels they owe you. They bank on your exhaustion.
Exactly. But Daniel did not go away. He decided to test out the small claims court system here in Israel. He filed a claim online, and he told us that within 24 hours of the filing, after 3 months of being ignored, the airline suddenly found their checkbook and offered a full refund plus compensation. It was like magic.
It is the ultimate power move for the little guy. It is like flicking a switch that suddenly makes you visible to the corporate giant. One day you are a support ticket number, the next day you are a legal liability on a clerk's desk.
It really is, and it got him thinking about the whole mechanism. Why does it work so well? So today we are diving into the world of small claims. We are going to look at where this idea even came from, how the Israeli system works, including the current limit for small claims court, and what happens when someone refuses to pay up.
And we will get into the hierarchy too. What happens if your claim is too big for small claims? Where do you go next? It is a fascinating bit of legal engineering designed specifically to level the playing field. It is the express lane of justice.
So let us start with the history, Herman. Daniel was asking about the origins. This feels like a modern power to the people's thing, but I am guessing it goes back further than the digital age. Was there a specific patient zeros for the small claims court?
Oh, much further. The philosophical roots are ancient, but the modern small claims court, as we recognize it, a simplified, lawyer-free zone, really started to take shape in the early 20th century. If you want to find the pioneer jurisdiction, most legal historians point to Cleveland, Ohio in 1913.
1913. So, over a century ago. What was the catalyst back then? Was it airlines ghosting people on Zeppelin flights?
Not quite Zeppelins, but it was the same problem we have today, just in a different context. The traditional legal system was becoming too expensive, too slow, and too technical for small disputes. If someone owed you $10 in 1913 and a lawyer cost $15 just to walk through the door, justice was effectively priced out of your reach. The Cleveland Conciliation Court, led by Judge Manuel Levine, was designed to fix that. It was informal, fast, and you did not need a law degree to participate. It was a response to the Industrial Revolution, where suddenly thousands of small transactions were happening every day, and the old courts could not keep up.
It is funny, because before that, you had things like the pie powder courts in England, right? I remember reading about those in that History of Markets book you lent me.
Yes, the courts of pie powders. That name always cracks me up. It comes from the French pieds poudres, which literally means dusty feet. These were temporary courts set up at medieval markets and fairs for travelers and merchants. If you were a merchant passing through a town and someone scammed you on a sack of wool, you could not wait 6 months for the king's court to hear your case. You had dusty feet, you were on the move. So the court gave you a ruling right there on the spot, often within an hour.
So the Dusty Feet's courts were the original express lane for justice. It is the same energy as Daniel filing his claim from his laptop while eating cereal.
Precisely. The core idea has always been about accessibility and speed. If the process is more expensive than the claim, the law is essentially useless for the average person. Small claims courts were the institutional answer to that market failure of justice. In the United States, this spread rapidly after Cleveland, and by the 1920s, most major cities had some version of a people's court.
That makes total sense. And now we see it here in Israel in a very robust way. Daniel mentioned the limit was 38,000 shekels, but the current limit for small claims court in Israel should be verified against official Ministry of Justice sources for the most up-to-date figure. It is adjusted for inflation periodically, which is a nice touch.
Right, and that is a significant amount of money for a small claim. It covers a lot of ground, from landlord-tenant disputes to car accidents, faulty appliances, and, of course, airline refunds under the aviation services law.
One thing Daniel mentioned that I found interesting is the self-service nature of it. In Israel, it is all digital now through a system called Net Hamishpat. You do not even have to go to a courthouse to file. You just need a smart card or a government identification login.
That is one of the areas where Israel actually shines. The digitization of the judiciary has been a huge priority. You log in with your national identification, you fill out a form, you attach your evidence, like Daniel's emails to the airline or photos of a leaky ceiling, and you pay a small fee. The system even helps you calculate the interest and linkage to the Consumer Price Index.
The fee is 1% of the claim, right? That seems very reasonable.
Exactly. 1% with a minimum of 50 shekels. So if you are suing for 10,000 shekels, it costs you 100 shekels to file. It is a very low barrier to entry. But here is the kicker, and this is what makes it a people's court. As a rule, lawyers are not allowed to represent you in the room.
Wait, not allowed at all? That sounds like a nightmare for the lawyers, but a dream for everyone else.
In the actual hearing, no. You cannot bring a lawyer to speak for you unless the judge gives special permission, which they rarely do. The idea is to keep the playing field level. If I am a regular guy and I am suing a massive insurance company and they show up with a team of high-priced litigators, I am going to get steamrolled by technicalities. By banning lawyers, the judge ensures the focus stays on the facts, not on who has the better legal gymnastics. The judge actually takes an active role, asking questions and helping the parties explain their positions.
That is actually a brilliant equalizer. But can a company sue a person in small claims? Because if I am a big company, I would love to use the fast lane to sue people for late payments.
Ah, that is a great question, and the answer is a firm no. In Israel, a corporation or a limited company, what we call a shevra ba'am, cannot be a plaintiff in small claims court. They can only be defendants.
Really? So a big utility company cannot sue me for a late bill in small claims?
Nope. If they want to sue you, they have to go to the regular magistrate's court, which is more expensive and slower. Small claims is reserved for individuals or exempt dealers, the Osek Patur small business owners. It is a one-way street designed to protect the individual from corporate bullying. It prevents big companies from using the small claims court as a high-speed debt collection agency.
That explains why the airline folded so fast for Daniel. Think about the math from their perspective. Once Daniel filed that claim, the airline knew they could not send their fancy lawyers into the room. They would have to send a regular employee to stand there and explain to a judge why they ignored a customer for 3 months.
Exactly. And even if they won, the time spent sending a representative to court is worth more than the cost of just giving Daniel his refund. It is a classic nuisance value settlement. The moment that court summons hits their desk, the cost of being difficult suddenly outweighs the cost of being fair. Plus, if they lose, the judge might award Daniel exemplary damages for the airline's bad faith behavior.
It is like a legal check engine light. It forces the company to actually look at the file instead of letting it sit in a pile of automated rejections. And the volume is staggering, Herman. Daniel was asking about the workload. How many people are actually doing this?
In Israel, small claims courts handle a substantial volume of cases each year. The exact number should be verified against current Ministry of Justice statistics, but it demonstrates that people genuinely trust the system.
That is a significant amount of litigation for a country of 10 million people. It shows that people really trust the system.
Because the rules of evidence are more relaxed. In a regular court, you have strict rules about what is admissible, how witnesses are cross-examined, and the hearsay rule. In small claims, the judge can say, "Look, just show me the WhatsApp messages, or tell me your side of the story in plain Hebrew." They can accept evidence that wouldn't fly in a higher court if they think it helps them get to the truth. Most hearings last about 15 to 20 minutes.
I love that. It is more like a moderated conversation than a theatrical performance. But let us talk about the teeth of the system. Daniel mentioned Hatzalah Lepoal, the Enforcement and Collection Authority. Because winning a judgment is one thing, but actually getting the money is another. I have heard horror stories of people winning and then never seeing a cent.
This is where a lot of people get stuck. They get a piece of paper from a judge saying, "The airline owes you 5,000 shekels," and they think the money will just appear in their bank account the next morning. It doesn't. The court doesn't have a cash register in the back.
Right. You have to go and collect it. And if the defendant is stubborn, that is when Hatzalah Lepoal comes in. What can they actually do?
Hatzalah Lepoal is a separate body under the Ministry of Justice. If the defendant doesn't pay within 30 days of the judgment, you open an enforcement file. And Hatzalah Lepoal has some pretty scary powers. They could put a lien on the person's bank account, which freezes the funds. They can seize their car. They can even put a lien on their salary, so a portion of their paycheck goes directly to you every month.
And Daniel mentioned something about a travel ban? That seems intense for a small claim.
It is called a stay of exit order. It is a last resort, but it is effective. If you are a business owner who refuses to pay a court-ordered refund to a customer, and suddenly you can't go on your summer vacation to Greece because there is a red flag on your passport at Ben Gurion Airport, you are going to find that money very quickly. It is the ultimate find-out phase of the legal process.
For companies, I imagine it is even easier because their bank accounts are public record.
Exactly. Hatzalah Lepoal can just send a digital order to all the major banks in Israel. If the company has an account at Bank Leumi or Bank Hapoalim, the system finds it and pulls the exact amount owed plus interest and legal costs. Most big companies have automated systems for this now because it happens so often. They would rather just pay the judgment than have their corporate accounts flagged and their credit rating impacted.
So what is the next step up? Daniel was asking about the magistrate's court. Is small claims just a junior version of that, or is it a totally different beast?
Technically, small claims is a division within the magistrate's court, the Beit Mishpat HaShalom. In Israel, the magistrate's court is the workhorse of the judiciary. It handles civil claims according to its jurisdiction limits.
That is a huge jump from the small claims limit. That is a massive gap.
It is. So if you're suing for an amount above the small claims limit, you are already out of small claims and into the regular civil track of the magistrate's court, and that is a completely different world. It is like moving from a friendly game of checkers to a high-stakes chess match where the other person has a grandmaster whispering in their ear.
I am guessing that is where the lawyers come back in.
Oh yeah. In the regular magistrate's court, the rules of procedure are strict. You have formal discoveries phases where you have to exchange documents. You have pre-trial hearings. You have complex rules of evidence. If you try to represent yourself there against a big company, you are in for a very rough time. It can take 2 or 3 years to get a verdict, whereas small claims usually takes 4 to 6 months.
So there is almost a dead zone for justice. If your claim is for, say, 50,000 shekels, it might be too big for small claims, but too small to justify the 20,000 shekels in legal fees you would pay a lawyer to handle a regular court case.
That is a very real problem, Korn. It is a gap in the system. A lot of people choose to downsize their claim just to stay in small claims. If someone owes you 45,000 shekels, you might choose to only sue for the small claims limit just so you can use the fast, lawyer-free process. You lose some money on the principal, but you save 10,000 in legal fees and 2 years of your life. It is a strategic haircut.
I can see why people do it. It is a pragmatic choice. Now, what about appeals? Daniel wanted to know what the chain looks like. If you lose in small claims because the judge had a bad day, can you just say, I want a second opinion?
Not exactly. This is another way small claims is different. In a regular court case, you usually have an automatic right of appeal to the next level up, but in small claims, there is no automatic right. You don't get a do-over just because you didn't like the result.
Wait, so the judge's word is final?
Not quite, but you have to ask for permission to appeal. It is called a bakasha lereshut irur, a request for leave to appeal. You have to file this with the district court within 15 days of the judgment.
And the district court is the level above the magistrate's court.
Exactly. But here is the thing. District court judges generally do not like taking small claims appeals. They will only grant permission if they see a fundamental error in law or a serious miscarriage of justice. They won't do it just because the judge believed the other guy's story over yours. They aren't going to retry the case or hear new witnesses. They are just checking if the process was legal.
So they are looking for bugs in the legal code, not rewatching the game.
Precisely. If the small claims judge followed the rules, the district court will almost always say, no, we aren't hearing this. It is designed to prevent the system from being bogged down by people who just can't accept they lost. It keeps the small in small claims.
It is funny how the whole system is built around this idea of proportionality. The amount of legal effort the state is willing to put in has to match the amount of money at stake.
That is the core of it. We often think of justice as this absolute infinite thing, but in practice, it is a resource. And the small claims court is the state's way of saying, we will give you a fair hearing, but we aren't going to spend 100,000 shekels of taxpayer money to decide who owns a 500 shekel toaster. It is about efficiency.
It's a pragmatic approach to the law, and honestly, it's one that feels very Israelis in a way. It's direct, it's digital, and it's about getting to the point. No fluff, just the facts.
It really is. And for our listeners, it's worth noting that this is a tool you should actually use. Most people are intimidated by the word court, but the small claims system is specifically built for people who aren't lawyers. The judges expect you to be a bit nervous. They expect you not to know the legal jargon.
Right. Daniel's story is the perfect example. He didn't even have to go to a hearing. The mere act of filing was enough to trigger the settlement. The airline's legal department probably has a filter that says, if a customer files a real claim, just pay them.
That is the shadow of the law's effect. The court doesn't even have to do anything. Its mere existence changes the behavior of the powerful. The airline realized that they were no longer in a customer service interaction where they held all the cards. They were in a legal interaction where a judge was going to look at their behavior and potentially write a public judgment that says, this airline ignores its customers.
It's like bringing a referee to a backyard game where the other team was making up their own rules. Suddenly, they start playing by the book.
Exactly. And speaking of referees, I think we should talk a bit about the practical takeaways here. If you are going to use this system, what do you need to know?
Well, the first thing is documentation. Daniel had every email, every booking confirmation, and every "we will get back to you" message saved in a folder. Without that, a small claim is just, he said, she said, she said.
That is crucial. In small claims, the judge is looking for a preponderance of evidence. Basically, who is more likely to be telling the truth? If you have a time-stamped email and they have nothing but a vague corporate policy, you win. It's that simple. Also, keep your statement of claim, the Cativtivia, short and to the point. Judges hate reading 20 pages of venting. Just tell them what happened, why it was wrong, and how much money you want.
And the second thing is, knowing who you are suing. This is a mistake a lot of people make. You can't just sue the airline. You have to find their registered corporate name and their address for service.
Right. In Israel, you can find this on the Registrar of Companies website. You need their CHET-P number, the company registration number. If you get that wrong on your filing, the whole thing can be dismissed on a technicality because you sued a legal entity that doesn't exist. It's a bit of detective work before you start.
But once you have that, the digital filing is pretty straightforward. And hey, if you are lucky, you might even get a settlement offer before you have to put on your nice shoes for court.
It really is a great example of how technology is actually making the law more accessible. We spend a lot of time talking about how AI might replace lawyers, but sometimes the most revolutionary thing is just a well-designed web form that lets a guy like Daniel get his money back from a billion-dollar company without spending a fortune.
It's the democratization of the sue-me threat. It used to be a bluff only rich people could make. Now, anyone with 100 shekels and an internet connection can make it a reality. It puts the power back in power to the people.
And that is a beautiful thing. It reminds me of what we discussed in one of our earlier episodes, when we talked about how the law isn't just for the big stuff, it's the fabric of our everyday interactions. It is the rules of the road for society.
Exactly. And hey, if you are enjoying these deep dives into the weird and wonderful ways our world works, we would really appreciate it if you could leave us a review on your podcast app or on Spotify. It genuinely helps other curious minds find the show.
Yeah, it makes a huge difference to us. And if you have a question or a weird prompt of your own, maybe you have a story about a small claims win or a bureaucratic nightmare, you can always head over to myweirdprompts.com and use the contact form there. We love hearing what is on your mind.
We really do. This has been a fascinating journey through the People's Court. Thanks to Daniel for sending this in and for fighting the good fight against corporate ghosting. He definitely earned that espresso this morning.
He definitely did. And he proved that sometimes the best way to get someone's attention is to send them a formal invitation to meet a judge.
All right, everyone. Thanks for listening to My Weird Prompts. We will be back next week with another exploration into the obscure and the essential.
Until then, keep asking those weird questions and keep your receipts.
See ya. 8.
This episode was generated using Gemini Flash 3. Text-to-speech engine was Chatterbox Turbo.
Thanks for listening to another episode of My Weird Prompts, an AI-generated podcast featuring Daniel Rosehill's AI prompts, as answered by a revolving cast of friendly AI characters including me, Cornelius the Sloth. Subscribe on Spotify or visit myweirdprompts.com.